Hear and know stories. Hear and know English. Hear and know stories in English. This is your program. Hear and know.
Hello, and welcome to our program, Hear and Know, sponsored by the Office of Language Self-Learning at UAEH, where you have the opportunity to hear stories in English and test your understanding. My name is David Watson. Each week we'll listen to part of an interesting story and ask questions about what happened. We'll give you the answers to check your understanding. Then, at the end of the program, we'll ask a question for a prize. Send your answer in English via email as soon as possible to hearandknow@uaeh.edu.mx. We'll print out all the correct answers and draw one to win the prize and announce it on the next program. Program 4, Part 2. Without further ado, here's your host, Roberta King.
Thank you, David. If you're just joining us, here is our story so far. While Dr. Watson was visiting, Sherlock Holmes showed him a letter he had received written on expensive foreign paper. The note said that someone would visit that evening around 7:45 about a very secret matter. After the visitor arrived, Holmes deduced that his visitor was King Wilhelm of Bohemia. The king told his story, which concerned his involvement with Irene Adler, a singer who currently lived in London. Irene had in her possession a photograph of them taken together, which threatened the monarchy of Bohemia. King Wilhelm was about to marry Princess Clotilda of Scandinavia and was afraid that Irene Adler would send the photograph to her, which would prevent their marriage. Of course, Holmes assured the king he would get the photo. The next day, Holmes dressed up as a servant and discovered that Irene Adler had married her lawyer, Godfrey Norton. In fact, Holmes had acted as a witness at their wedding. He planned to meet Irene at her house in Bryony Lodge that evening and arranged for Watson to wait outside with a smoke stick. When he raised his hand, Watson was to throw the smoke stick through the window and shout, "Fire!"
Now let's listen to something about Sherlock Holmes' influence on society.
There has been much written about Sherlock Holmes and his influence. He has been studied by psychologists, chemists, and scientists. He was inducted into the Royal Society of Chemistry as the only fictional honorary fellow due to his contributions to forensics. His Holmesian or Sherlockian deduction and logic are taught to British Secret Intelligence Service or MI6 agents. Here are some books and articles about Sherlock Holmes in recent times. Intelligence of Sherlock Holmes and Other Three-Pipe Problems by John Radford. In 1999, psychologist John Radford wrote an entertaining and lucid book about the intelligence of Sherlock Holmes, among other things. He took the information that was known about Holmes and psychoanalyzed him from his childhood to his near death at Reichenbach Falls and beyond to discover that Holmes had a very powerful intellect. The book also talks about Dr. John Watson. Its tone can make people feel that Holmes was a real person instead of a fictional character from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's imagination. As Watson would have said, excellent! Sherlock Holmes, Scientific Detective by Laura J. Snyder. Laura J. Snyder of St. John's University in Jamaica, New York, wrote an article in 2004 where she discussed Conan Doyle's intent about Sherlock Holmes when writing his stories. She covers Holmes and the historical sciences, rules to interpret nature, and whether Holmes was in fact the father of scientific criminal detection. One of her conclusions is that Conan Doyle was affected by the beginnings of scientific criminal detection, which occurred around the time he invented the character of Sherlock Holmes.
"You know my methods, Watson," as Holmes would have said.
Neurological Case Theory, Looking for Clues, by P.A. Kempster. Published in the Journal of Medical Neuroscience in 2006, this article comparing the methods of problem-solving in neurological cases with the plots of Sherlock Holmes' detective stories was written by P.A. Kempster from the Neurosciences Department of Monash University in Victoria, Australia. Kempster specifically compares the neuroscience single-case report with the conventional detective story. Elementary. Evidence-Based Medicine Following in Sherlock Holmes' Footsteps by Jürgen Nordenström. This is a 91-page book written in 2007 by Jürgen Nordenström, a professor of surgery at the Karolinska Institutet, one of Europe's largest medical universities and Sweden's largest center for medical training and research. In it, he parallels modern medical research with Sherlock Holmes' deductive techniques, using Holmes' quotations to make his point. He explains how medical practice must be based on properly researched evidence, not on opinion, hearsay, or prematurely reached conclusions. He provides links to respected medical research libraries throughout the world, as well as informs doctors how to use evidence-based medicine in their practices. His book is particularly important given the number of reports in the past few years where results were proved to have been changed to give false conclusions. As Holmes said many times to Dr. Watson, "When you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth." Can Sherlock Holmes Help Cognitive Psychology? By André Didier-Jean and Fernand Gobet. Psychologists André Didier-Jean and Fernand Gobet published a humorous but sincere article in 2008 about the psychological makeup of an expert using Sherlock Holmes as their model. Using various quotes from Holmes to illustrate their arguments, the psychologists offer some thoughts on different ways to use literature in scientific studies to understand the cognitive workings of experts. As Holmes explained in A Study in Scarlet, from a drop of water, a logician could infer the possibility of an Atlantic or a Niagara without having seen or heard of one or the other. This just goes to show how one man's imagination can affect and intrigue generations to follow. At the end of this program, we'll listen to a recording of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle from 1930 talking about his creation, Sherlock Holmes.
Before we begin Chapter 3 of Sherlock Holmes' story, A Scandal in Bohemia, here are some questions for you to find the answers to in the following segment. First, why did Watson call Irony Adler Irony Norton? Because she had married Godfrey Norton, or because she changed her name to escape the king? What happened to Sherlock Holmes when he went to help Irony Norton? Did he push her down, or did he fall to the ground and cut his face? And finally, three, why did Irony Norton show Holmes where the photograph was? Because she thought the house was on fire and it was valuable to her, or because he asked her where it was?
Let's listen to the third chapter of A Scandal in Bohemia.
Chapter 3. Fire. That evening, Holmes again wore different clothes and a large black hat. But it was not just the clothes that were different. He changed his face, his hair, everything. He was a different man. We walked together to Serpentine Avenue. Outside the house, there were a lot of people who were smoking, laughing, and talking. Holmes and I walked up and down in front of the house. "You see," said Holmes to me, "I think she doesn't want her new husband to see the photograph. But where is it? At her bank? No, women like to keep important things themselves. I'm sure it's in her house." "But the king's men tried to find it," I said. "Yes, but they didn't know where to look," said Holmes. "But how will you know?" I asked. "I won't look. She'll show me. She'll have to." Just then a taxi arrived. One of the men in the street ran to open the door. Then another man pushed him. Other men were also pushing and shouting, and a fight began. Irene Norton was in the middle of it. But Sherlock Holmes ran to help her. Then suddenly he fell to the ground, with blood running down his face. Irene Norton hurried to her front door, but she looked back. "How kind of him to help me! Is the poor man hurt?" she called. "He's dead," cried some voices. "No, he's only hurt," cried others. "Bring him into the sitting room," she said. Some people carried Holmes into the house. I waited outside the window and watched. I saw how beautiful Irene Norton was. Then Holmes put up his hand, and I threw the smokestick into the room. Immediately, the people in the street and in the house all began to shout "fire" very loudly. The house was full of smoke. I walked away, and 10 minutes later, Holmes came to meet me. "Well done, Watson," he said.
"Have you got the photograph?" I asked.
"I know where it is. She showed me," he answered.
"But why did she show you?"
"It's easy," he said, and laughed. "You saw all those people in the street? I paid them to help us. It wasn't a real fight, and the blood wasn't real. When people shout fire, a woman runs to the most important thing in her house, her baby, her gold, or her photograph. Mrs. Norton ran to find her photograph, which is in a cupboard in the sitting room. I saw it, but I did not take it. Tomorrow we will go to her house with the king. We'll go very early before she gets up. The king himself can take the photograph from the cupboard, and then we'll go." While Holmes was talking, we were walking home to Baker Street. When we arrived at my friend's house, a young man hurried past us and said,
"Good night, Mr. Sherlock Holmes."
"I've heard that voice before," said Holmes to me. He looked down the street. But who was it?
Sherlock Holmes is a master of disguise, isn't he?
Here's our story so far.
Irene Adler married Godfrey Norton and was now known as Irene Norton. Holmes and Watson went to meet her at her home. When she arrived by cab, a group of men surrounded her and began fighting. Holmes had to rescue her. As he went to help her, he fell to the ground and cut his face. As he had helped her, Irene invited him inside. While he sat and talked to her, Holmes made the prearranged sign. He lifted his hand, Watson threw the smokestick into the room through the window, and the men began shouting, "Fire!" As the house filled with smoke, Watson walked slowly away and waited for Holmes. 10 minutes later, Holmes met him on the corner. Although he didn't have the photograph, he knew where it was. While walking home, he explained that he had paid the people on the street and pretended to be hurt. The blood wasn't real. He knew the photograph was valuable to Irene, and that she would save it if she thought the house was on fire. Holmes planned to take the king there the next day to get the photograph from the cupboard. As they reached 221B Baker Street, a young man greeted Holmes with a familiar voice he couldn't place.
Here are some questions for you to answer while listening to the unexpected conclusion of A Scandal in Bohemia. First, what happened when Holmes, Watson, and the king arrived at Irony's house? They were greeted by an old servant, or the police were waiting for them? 2. What did they find in the cupboard? The photograph of Irony and the king, or a letter and a photograph of Irony? And finally, 3, what did Holmes want from the king? The photograph, or Irony, or more money?
Now let's listen to the surprising conclusion of Sherlock Holmes' case, A Scandal in Bohemia.
Chapter 4, A Photograph. The next day we went to Irene Norton's house with the king. An old servant opened the door.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
She asked, and smiled. Yes, said my friend. He looked very surprised.
Mrs. Irene Norton and her husband left England this morning. They will never come back to this country.
What? Cried Holmes, his face white and angry.
And what about the photograph?
Cried the king. We all hurried into the sitting room. Holmes ran to the cupboard and opened it. Inside was a photograph, not of Irene Adler and the king, but of the beautiful Irene alone. There was also a letter for Sherlock Holmes. We all read it together. My dear Mr. Sherlock Holmes, you did it very well. I thought that it was a real fire, and that you were just a kind old man. But after I opened the cupboard, I began to think. I knew about the famous Sherlock Holmes. I knew your address. And I knew that the king asked you to find the photograph. So I quickly dressed as a young man and followed you home to Baker Street. I wanted to find out if you really were Sherlock Holmes. I said goodnight to you outside your door. My husband and I have decided to leave England. Please tell the king that I shall not show the photograph to anybody. I love my husband, and he loves me, and he is a better man than the king. But here is a different photograph, and the king can keep this photograph if he likes. Irene Norton.
What a woman,
cried the king.
Why didn't I marry her? What a woman!
A very, very clever woman, said Sherlock Holmes coldly. I am sorry, Your Majesty, that this business has not finished well.
No, no, said the king. She writes that she will never show the photograph to anybody. I need nothing more than her word. There is no danger for me now. How can I thank you, dear Mr. Holmes?
I would like just one thing, Your Majesty.
Tell me at once what it is, said the king.
This photograph. The king looked at him in surprise.
Irene's photograph?
He cried.
But of course, it is yours.
And so, there was no terrible scandal in the royal families of Europe. And Sherlock Holmes still has the photograph of the woman who was cleverer than he was.
Now, let's hear the end of the story.
When Holmes, Watson, and the king arrived at Irene Norton's house, an old servant opened the door and told them that the Nortons had left England, never to return. Holmes was furious and ran to the cupboard where Irene had kept the photograph. When he opened it, the men saw that she had left a letter and a photo of herself without the king. She explained in her letter that although she believed Holmes's disguise and the fire at first, she thought about it further and wondered if it could be a trick. She had heard of Sherlock Holmes and knew that the king had employed him to get the picture from her. So she dressed up like a young man and followed them home. It was she who had said, "Good night, Mr. Sherlock Holmes," when they had arrived home that night. She promised not to show anyone the picture and said that she loved her husband, who was a better man than the king. Holmes was not pleased because he had lost, but he asked the king for Irene's photograph. Irene kept her word, and there was no scandal in Bohemia. Well, that was certainly a shock. Sherlock Holmes beaten, and by a woman.
Ah, yes. But remember, Holmes kept Irene Adler's photograph and referred to her several times in different cases. Quite unusual for him. And now for the winner of last week's question. What is the name of the real person that Sherlock Holmes was based on?
Unfortunately, there was no winner for last week's question. But the answer is Dr. Joseph Bell was the name of the real person that Sherlock Holmes was based on.
Now for this week's question to win our prize.
What was Irene Adler's married name? Send your answer in English to Here and Know at uaeh.edu.mx. The question again? What was Irene Adler's married name? Thanks for listening. This is Roberta King, courtesy of the Dirección de Autoaprendizaje de Idiomas. I look forward to your participation and hope you'll tune in next week for Sherlock Holmes' next adventure, The Five Orange Pips. Now, as promised earlier, here is a recording of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in 1930 talking about his literary creation, Sherlock Holmes. We hope you enjoy it.
Let's see now, I've got to speak one or two words just to try my voice, I understand. There are two things that people always want to ask me. One of them is how I ever came to write the Sherlock Holmes stories. And the other is about how I came to have psychic experiences and to take so much interest in that question. Well, first of all, about the Sherlock Holmes stories, they came about in this way. I was quite a young doctor at the time. I had, of course, a scientific training. And I used occasionally to read detective stories. It always annoyed me how in the old-fashioned detective story, the detective always seemed to get at his results either by some sort of lucky chance or a fluke, or else it was quite unexplained how he got there. He got there, but he never gave an explanation how. Well, that didn't seem to me quite playing the game. It seemed to me that he's bound to give his reasons why he came to his conclusions. Well, once I began to think about this, I began to think of turning scientific methods, as it were, onto the work of detection. And I used, as a student, to have an old professor, his name was Bell, who was extraordinarily quick at deductive work. He would look at the patient, he would hardly allow the patient to open his mouth, but he would make his diagnosis of the disease, and also very often of the patient's nationality and occupation and other points, entirely by his power of observation. So naturally I thought to myself, well, if a scientific man like Bell was to come into the detective business, he wouldn't do these things by chance. He'd get the thing by building it up scientifically. So having once conceived that line of thought, you can well imagine that I had, as it were, a new idea of the detective, and one which it interested me to work out. I thought of 100 little dodges, as you may say, 100 little touches by which he could build up his conclusions, and then I began to write stories on those lines. At first, I think they attracted a little, very little attention. But after a time, when I began the short adventures, one after the other, coming out month after month in the Strand magazine, people began to recognize that it was different to the old detective, that there was something there which was new. They began to buy the magazine, and it prospered, and so I may say did I. We both came along together, and from that time, Sherlock Holmes fairly took root. I've written a good deal more about him than I ever intended to do, but my hand has been rather forced by kind friends who continually wanted to know more. And so it is that this monstrous growth has come out of what was really a comparatively small seed. Now, the curious thing is how many people there are in the world who are perfectly convinced that he is a living human being. I get letters addressed to him. I get letters asking for his autograph. Get letters addressed to his rather stupid friend, Watson. I've even had ladies writing to say that they'd be very glad to act as his housekeeper. One of them, when she heard that he had turned to the occupation of keeping bees, wrote saying that she was an expert at segregating the queen, whatever that may mean, and that she was evidently predestined to be the housekeeper of Sherlock Holmes. I don't know if there's anything more I could say with advantage about him.
Thanks for listening to Hear and Know. This is David Watson reminding you to tune in next week to listen to another story and to find out the winner of our weekly contest. Remember to send your answer in English to Hear and Know at uaeh.edu.mx. That's Hear and Know at uaeh.edu.mx. If you would like a copy of this program, please contact us at 771-717-2000, extension 5550.
You have been listening to Hear and Know. Tune in every Wednesday at noon. Radio Universidad 99.7.